Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century. Hello, Gary, Indiana. Hello, Northwest Indiana. Northeast Illinois, Gary, Indiana, Chicagoland area. Welcome to the Small Business Advocate Show. Got a new station up there, WLTH. Just picked up the Small Business Advocate Show today, and I appreciate you guys doing that. Looking forward to visiting with you in the days and weeks and months ahead. If you have a question, 888-822-8255. If you have a comment, it's the same number. If you want to agree or disagree with me, it works the same, 888-822-8255. Our special guest this hour is Jonathan Zuck. He is the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies, and Jonathan joins us a couple of times a month to give us an update on what's happening in the information technology world. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here, Tim.
You're actually not in your home today. You're actually in Florida, aren't you?
I sure am. There's a programmers conference going on down here in Orlando, and
what does that look like?
Gave a couple of talks.
What does that look like when a bunch of programmers get together? I'm trying to imagine that.
Well, it ain't dressy.
I was going to say, are we talking wall-to-wall pocket protectors here?
No, the world's changing. Pocket protectors are the cliche of the past.
Okay.
It's hip to be a geek now.
Yeah, in fact, I was talking
cool.
to someone. I have a friend of mine, Natalia Lee, was on the show earlier, a week or so ago, and her new book is out, and it's called Revenge of the Computer Widows. And she says that people are actually selling pocket protectors as novelty items now.
Exactly.
It's what is it, the Huey Lewis song, is hip to be square?
Exactly, and it is.
Yeah. Now you're not,
I mean, let's remember that there are 350,000 unfilled jobs in the IT industry.
Yeah.
And in a few years, that number could be closer to 1 million.
Are you listening, folks? Those of you who have children who are they're in high school and about to go to college or whatever, say that again.
350,000 unfilled jobs. Soon to be 1 million, average salary $53,000 a year.
Were you the one that told me that you just heard of a 19-year-old that got a job for $90,000? Somebody told me that.
I'm probably not the one who told you, but that doesn't surprise me at all.
He was a personal acquaintance of this young person, 19 years old. He just named his price, and he got $90,000. Now, let me ask you this question. We hadn't planned on talking about this, but I'm glad we brought this up. If you're the parent of a young person, you know, they're 10 or 12 years old or in high school or whatever, what would you recommend, what would you encourage your child to do in order to be prepared to take advantage of one of those jobs?
Well, it's interesting because the backgrounds of people in the IT industry are very eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
My education was in international relations, not in computer science.
Mm-hmm.
But it is good to get some grounding in a little bit of math, some logical thinking. Some music training is probably a good thing for a lot of types of careers. It's just something that you can do. It's important not to be very intimidated by having a career in IT. One of the things that's interesting is that this coming Tuesday, October 5th, is National Techies Day. And there are events taking place all over the country, and we're doing one in D.C. To try and bring the idea of tech careers to kids and talk to them about what it's going to be like to be in the technology industry and to make it really approachable, that no matter what it is that you're good at, no matter what it is you enjoy doing, there's probably an application of that in the IT industry.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do a... we're going to be at an inner-city computer learning center called Kids Computer Workshop, and the first thing we're going to do is bring in some of our members. We'll have a programmer there, a network engineer, a database person, an animator for the movies, and we're going to have a kind of a Jerry Springer style panel discussion. Because I've had practice, you know.
That might be a little bit of an unfortunate way to term that. you're not going to have bouncers or anything there, are you?
No bouncers.
Okay, look, when we talk about this 19-year-old that made $90,000, when you say that to a 15-year-old, then that person's thinking, hey, that means I don't have to go to college. Because it sounds to me like maybe by the time I graduate from college at 22 or 23, I'm already over the hill.
Well,
what's your response?
You're certainly not over the hill, and if you have the opportunity to go to college, you should definitely do it. I mean, we have a lot of people in this country that still don't necessarily have that opportunity, and it is possible to get entry-level work in the IT industry without a college degree. $90,000 for a 19-year-old is by no means the norm. So
no, I agree with you, but I have.
But people do come out of high school with network certifications or help desk.
I know two brothers that who are in their 20s, and neither one of them have college degrees. And the reason they won't go back to college is because they're making more money than they just can't stop to go to school because they're making so much money in the IT industry.
Right. Exactly.
It sounds like a little bit like the way some of the professional professional sports leagues are sucking, you know, college talent out of to go professional early. It sounds like maybe the IT industry, maybe not by design but by necessity, is maybe doing the same thing.
I mean, to some extent, it is possible to start a little lower in the industry and work your way up. It's not a credentials oriented industry by any means.
Yeah.
Because they're so desperate for people. If you are willing to learn the skills necessary to do the job, that's all that matters to most employers in this industry.
Well, the one thing that I'm thinking of, and again, I had not necessarily thought we'd talk about this, but I do think it's important to mention, and that is that this is a very entrepreneurial industry. I mean, it's the quintessential entrepreneurial industry, isn't it? And the IT industry. And if you go to college, you know, universities are not exactly all that entrepreneurial. I wonder how, I don't know if you see where I'm going here with this.
Well, actually, that's one of the things that as a trade association we work on, and it looks like regular colleges are going to be the slowest to be relevant.
Yeah.
But we're going to see a lot more movement in, say, the community college area,
yeah,
where you have a lot more nimble.
Stand by, Jonathan. We got to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back. We are back. It's 24 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com, and that's where you can go if you missed all or part of this show. Then you can go back and hear it from my website by going to the on-demand feature of my current website. On the new website, which will be coming up any day now, it's going to be on the replay button. That new button is going to be called replay, and that'll allow you to hear the most recent show all over again at your convenience, as well as hundreds of archives, which we will be making available to you from the new website, which is on the way to you very, very fast. Jonathan Zuck is our guest. He's our good friend and the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies, and we're talking about the information technology industry. And one of the things that we talk about, which is what we were just talking about, Jonathan, is how this industry is changing the way we live. And we were talking about, you were mentioning that there are 350,000 unfilled high-tech jobs these days, and you predict that over the years to come, that's going to be growing even more. And we were talking about how to help our children prepare for those things. We off the air, we were talking a little bit about what the universities are going to look like in a few years, and you used the V word. you were talking about what some of the four-year schools are going to have to do, and you used the V word. Tell our audience what the V word is.
Yeah, make me use it again. I mean, it's coming to be a bit of a bad word, but it shouldn't be. But I think that some colleges are going to have to become more vocational.
Vocational.
And less abstract.
Yeah.
Because, there are very specific job requirements out there, and I think people are growing tired of of getting out of school with philosophy degrees and then going to work for temp agencies.
Right.
Until they can find the one job that they can get.
And, right.
With a huge job market available, et cetera, I think you're going to have, it's going to transform a lot of things. I mean, some colleges are going to become more vocational. Community colleges that are already more vocational in nature are going to become more competitive and more important. And we're going to see some changes in high schools as well. I mean, already in countries like France, you have a tracking system where people choose their careers much earlier than we do in this country, and I think you're going to begin to see some of that.
Well, you know, in the old days, Jonathan, and I remember these days when you all you had to do basically was get a degree, and the company you went to work for, the big company you went to work for, trained you. They actually didn't want you to know a lot of specific stuff sometimes because they wanted to train you the way they wanted you to operate. They wanted you to operate within their system. And now that's different. Things are all different now. And for the one thing, most young people are not going to work for big business anymore. They're going to work for small businesses. More and more of them are, more than ever before.
Yeah, an amazing number of people are hopping out of secure positions in big businesses to be a part of small businesses.
And, yeah.
I mean, that's part of what's really driving the growth of this industry is the fact that it's been able to remain the purview of small businesses.
Yeah.
With the internet, you've really removed the sort of manufacturing barriers of entry where you don't have to put up a bunch of brick and mortar.
Level the playing field.
And anybody can be a player.
Yeah. From a technology standpoint, the earth is flat, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly small.
Yeah. All right. You're down in Florida talking to some folks about something called XML. Tell us what XML is.
Well, one of the things that's very important and critical to so-called business-to-business e-commerce is the ability to share information. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are involved in electronic commerce to some extent. They're taking their product to the web, et cetera. But in the fast-paced internet, it's often not going to be enough to sell your products via your own website. You're going to want to be able to be, if you sell computers, you want to make sure that you're part of CNET's website, for example, because they do reviews and then they help pick dealers and salespeople in order to buy computers. And you're mm-hmm. going to see more and more of that, where you're going to want your data not only to be on your site, but on other people's sites as well,
mm-hmm.
to have as many different times to be in front of the customer as possible. And so the complication there is that everybody saves their information in different ways, in different types of databases, and they different, you know, just arbitrary differences about how they save the data, how they organize the data, and things like that, which makes it very difficult to share information. And XML is the technology that's going to make it a lot easier for the same information to be in lots of different places and be shared.
Sounds like opportunity, but it also sounds like maybe there might be a problem or two in that, and we're going to get you to tell us about that when we come back. And then we've got a lot more stuff to talk to you about, folks, with regard to the information technology industry. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Jonathan Zuck is our guest. Welcome back. It's 33 After. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I appreciate your business, whether you're listening over the radio or whether you're listening over the internet. Thank you very much. 888-822-8255. Give us a call if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, agree with me or disagree. If you'd like to agree with me or disagree with my guest, Jonathan Zuck, either one of those, you can call us too. Jonathan is the president of the Association for Competitive Technology, and his organization represents the technology industry, one of the fastest. It is the fastest growing trade association in the capital. And Jonathan, take a half a minute and tell us a little bit about the ACT.
Well, ACT is an IT Industry Trade Association, but we also got individual members that just want to be kept up to date about what's going on
mm-hmm.
In technology. Over the last 4 years, the number of bills relating to the IT industry has gone from 0 to 400.
Wow.
So there's a lot going on, and a lot of it's going to affect small businesses in particular,
mm-hmm.
things like digital signatures and internet tax, legislation are all things that we're trying to keep an eye on and will make a huge difference in the future of small businesses in the country.
And ACT, the Association for Competitive Technology, is an outstanding place to find out where what's going on and where it's headed and what you can do to be involved and how you can help Jonathan and his organization prevent the government from doing something that you and I know probably won't benefit us. Many things. One of the best things that they've done recently, Jonathan, is to keep their hands off of a lot of things. That's been one of their to their credit in a lot of ways.
Exactly. I actually had a debate with a reporter the other day who was saying that he didn't like the SEC chairman, a guy by the name of Kennard. He says, that guy never makes a decision. And I'm like, well, but you know what?
I'm not sure
it's a bad thing if a federal regulator takes a long time to make a decision.
No kidding.
How about a law that you have to wait a year before every new regulation?
I like that. In fact, I'm one of the people who rests easier when Congress is adjourned.
Right. I take some more time to ponder. That's
yes,
okay.
Exactly. XML. What are some of the problems with XML? You were talking about XML being... Just give us about a 10-second review of what that is.
Well, it's just XML is a format for your data that if everybody uses it will make it easy for people to share information, and particularly where you're going to see a lot of it is in the context of business-to-business electronic commerce.
Is this like Java, or is this another type of software?
Not really. It's like a database format. In other words, If you take a website like CNET, which is a very good website for going and finding out information about what computer you should buy and then where you should buy it, in order for them to create a site like that, they need to collect
information. How do you spell CNET?
CNET.
CNET.com?
Yeah, .com, exactly. If anybody's looking for a computer, it's a really good resource to go to get reviews.
Yeah.
And help on which computer system to buy, and it also helps tell you where to get it.
All right.
But they don't sell them themselves, so it's not that kind of situation. They just are a resource site for pointing you to people that sell computers.
I didn't mean to digress, but that was a good point, and I wanted to make sure we could tell people what the website was. Go ahead with XML.
CNET.com, very good, worth checking out. Right now they have a lot of work because they basically have to go out and just do a lot of research, or they get information from all of these different vendors in all sorts of different formats. But if everybody gave their information to CNET using XML, it would be a simple matter for them to create a roll-up site that says, well, Compaq, Presario, 323s are available at these 10 stores, and here's what each of these stores charges for these PCs. So it makes it much easier for a vendor to get included in a list like that if they've got a good price or a special deal or something like that.
What are the problems with XML?
Well, I mean, XML is just new, and it's not a standard yet, and it's going to take some time for people to start using it. And whenever there's a new standard, everybody kind of throws stuff at the wall and sees what sticks, and so it'll take a while for the standard, if you will, to settle down a little bit.
Do you think it will stick?
But I think XML will stick. Mm-hmm. It's just a question of what its sort of final form will be.
That's, this is not like VHS and beta, and this may be VHS or beta. We don't know which one.
No, I think it's not a VHS and beta. Right now, it's become universally accepted that XML is going to play this role.
Good.
And so it's just a question of letting the standard kind of come to a point of rest because it's right now evolving very quickly.
Right.
But it's already effective. And then what's happening is different industries are already proposing XML formats, if you will, for their industry. So if people go to oasis.org or biztalk, biztalk.org, those are two sites where there's lots of information about XML in general and then also how it applies to your business.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's still right now a kind of a technical thing, but the upgrowth of it is to allow you to have a kind of a multiplier effect for your electronic commerce.
All right. That sounds good. I'm looking forward to it. I did not know about XML. I had never heard of that before you mentioned it today.
And it's pretty new.
Yeah.
Why I'm down here telling software developers how to make use of it in the websites that they build.
Okay, we're going to take a break, Jonathan. It's 39 after the hour, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to come back and get Jonathan to give us a quick update on the Microsoft case. It's making progress through the court, and we got a lot of other information technology to talk to you about. I'm going to be talking about something called smart cards. You probably know a little bit about them yourself, and we're going to get Jonathan to tell us where he thinks that's going. We'll be right back. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. Welcome back, heroes. It's 44 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Jonathan Zuck is our guest. He's the president of the Association for Competitive Technologies. And if you are an IT company, you can join, and they will take your money. What's the typical fee for joining as a company?
Well, right now, for the rest of this year, it's just $100 to join as a company.
$100.
So it's pretty easy to get in as a company, and there's lots of benefits associated with it that you'll find about on the website. I mean, for example, we produced technology to do an HTML-based newsletter, an inbox newsletter that we send out. And we produce technology, actually uses XML behind the scenes, that we're going to make available to our members. Since we're not in competition with our members, we're going to... make this ability to have an online newsletter made available free to people to join. So
yeah, because
people think that alone's worth the price of the membership.
Absolutely, but you've also, for Joe and Susie American, if just wants to find out about some of the things you got going on, that's free, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. If an individual wants to just be sort of in the loop and get the newsletter and stuff like that, it's free to join. So we welcome people to the site.
How do they do that?
Act Online, actonline.org.
That's one word, Act Online, and you got a phone number.
Phone number is 202-331-2130.
All right, good. And on my new website, Jonathan, we're going to get you a link on that site to your site. So we'll work on that. Talk to us about Microsoft. Now, this case is making progress, and it's making progress from the standpoint of a decision being made. But I think every day that goes by, the marketplace is rendering whatever decision they make sort of moot.
Well, that is the issue, and that's what ultimately happened in the IBM case. Is the government realized that the industry about which they were trying to try the case just didn't exist anymore. And we have a similar situation. And it was kind of funny because the lead prosecutor, David Boyce, who... earlier in the case, when he was reading an email, got to the word L-O-G-I-N and pronounced it Login.
Oh, no.
Which, you know, is indicative of, you know, the problem with having lawyers decide the future
right.
of the technology industry.
Oh, no.
But he had the unmitigated gall in his closing arguments to say, this is a case about the real world. And so a lot of us were really amazed because we really thought the real world was, you know, outside the courtroom where, you know, Red Hat, a maker of Linux, has an $8 billion IPO and handhelds are quickly overtaking PCs in the PC marketplace. And Microsoft is facing challenge after challenge on the servers with, you know, Windows 2000 and security problems and things like that.
Right.
That's what most of us view as the real world. And this hallowed halls of justice in a room filled with pictures of old judges talking about something that happened in 1995 just doesn't seem very much like the real world.
And it sounds like Mr. Boyce doesn't get it because obviously he's got, you know, I guess I shouldn't say he has another agenda, but there have been some interesting things written about him and his other activities. I don't know if you can hear that or not.
He went to London, and while in London...
By the way, folks, Jonathan, Boyce is person...
Yes.
Boyce is the person...
prosecutor for the government.
Hired by the government. He's an independent individual. I mean, he's an independent attorney who was hired by the government. Go ahead.
He's a hired gun who took half of his normal hourly fee, so I think he's only making $250 an hour for this case.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he wanted to go down in history books as the guy who, you know, beat Microsoft.
Who brought down Microsoft.
And it's especially a fun game for him because he was IBM's attorney.
I didn't know that.
During their antitrust trouble.
I did not know that.
So a lot of the law that's on the books that he now has to fight against is law that he was responsible for getting there, which
very
sure makes
interesting.
It into a real game for him.
Very interesting. Well, now, tell us, what happened in London? There was something he went
well,
to
what
London.
He did is he was in London and was talking to a reporter and ended up saying that, yes, consumers in Great Britain could sue Microsoft if they wanted to, but they would need the help of an independent attorney in the United
mm-hmm.
States.
Mm-hmm. I wonder who that might be.
Yeah, well, who would you choose?
Yeah.
Why not the lead prosecutor in the Microsoft case? So,
now you see why I made the comment about his other agenda, you know, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, right now his primary agenda is just to win, but there's been a lot of that going on.
Is he going to win?
Huh?
Is he going to win?
Not ultimately.
Yeah.
Not ultimately. There's no case there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just this sort of smoke and mirrors of, I mean, I actually heard him say, I mean, one of the central theses of the case is that Microsoft shouldn't have integrated browsing functionality into the operating system. And so another thing he said is, well, this is, you know, and they've been pressed on what is the harm to consumers? What is the harm to consumers? Because all they really seem to be doing is protecting a couple of Microsoft's competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tried really hard to, like, produce harm to consumers. At one point he said, well, what about all those people that don't want a browser?
Did he say that?
On the face of that, it's just absurd.
It's absurd.
Because if there's any technology that literally everyone wants, it's a browser.
It's the browser. Well, you know, the interesting thing about this is if the case had been able to have been made and tried the day that they started it, it might have had some merit. But now, 2 years later, it doesn't have any merit, as you said.
The market's just changing.
The market's gone right around it, which is what we predicted.
Time stands still in the real world of the courtroom.
Stand by. We'll be right back, folks. It's 50 after. We are back. It's 54 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, Small Business Advocate, and Jonathan Zuck, President of the Association for Competitive Technologies, is our guest and our good friend. Jonathan, give us your website one more time, please.
That's www.actonline.org.
Check it out, folks. I recommend it to you. Jonathan, quickly, the remaining chronology of the Microsoft case.
Well, what just happened is the lawyers for both sides did closing arguments on the findings of fact, which is just sort of what happened, and is Microsoft a monopoly? I guess those are facts.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge now is going to come back in probably 4 to 6 weeks with a decision about the findings of fact, and then we'll talk about the conclusions of law associated with those facts. So in other words, this is what happened, and then was any of it illegal? And then only after that, if Microsoft is found to be in violation, will there be a discussion of remedies.
Do you know if
that's sort of the phases that are left.
Do you know if he has anybody helping him behind the bench with this? Or
he certainly has clerks that are younger and,
yes.
and perhaps more in touch with the technology.
He asked them to go find things for him, I'm sure. But do you think, I mean, would he be talking to any other judges or anything about this? He couldn't really, could he?
I don't think that he can, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's interesting that all of this resides...
That's why he wanted so badly for the sides to settle.
Yeah, it's all of this resides in that one guy. Okay, let's move on and talk about a couple more things. You've got some sites that you want to tell us about.
Yeah, I mean, more and more there are resources on the web and elsewhere for small businesses, especially small businesses that are trying to become internet businesses or to, you know, internet enable their businesses, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
One of those sites is bcentral.com for Business Central. So
mm-hmm.
it's just the letter B Central, all one word, .com. And this has information on getting started on the web, you know, promoting your business online, you know, affordable advertising, and then also things for managing your business more effectively, like saving office prices, comparing shipping rates, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular site is just about to launch a small business software initiative to make it easy to manage your small business without buying a lot of software. So things like small business accounting
mm-hmm.
and things like that are actually going to be available as online tools to make it easier to manage your business you know, without having to set up, you know, a complicated system inside of your business.
bcentral.com.
Right, exactly, bcentral.com.
All right.
And Ziff Davis has another kind of a resource and information site for small businesses that they call eBusiness. And if you, this is a give you resources about different kinds of technology for small businesses, etc. And that can be found at www.zdnet, as in Ziff Davis Net, zdnet.com/enterprise/ebusiness.
Okay.
zdnet.com/enterprise/ebusiness is Ziff Davis. And they're the publishers of PC Magazine and other publications as well. And that's their resource site for small businesses.
Okay, good. Thank you for bringing those sites to us. Folks, if you need to know what those are, email me and I'll make sure that I get those back to you.
There's a new book, too.
Yeah, you got 10 seconds. Go ahead.
This is a book called eBusiness.
Uh-huh.
And you can find it on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com, et cetera. It's by Ravi Kalakota. And it's the roadmap for success in e-business, and it talks about taking your old business and making it internet ready, if you will.
Gotta go, Jonathan. Thank you. See you next time. You did good.
Sounds great.
See you later, folks. We gotta wrap it up for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.